From KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. The attempt to recall Governor Mike Dunleavy was rejected today. The state's elections director did not certify the recall application, drawing from a legal review by Attorney General Kevin Clarkson. Clarkson says the recall application failed to show Dunleavy committed neglect of duty and that mere procedural or technical failures are not enough to meet the grounds for recall. Recall supporters say they will challenge the decision. Recall Dunleavy lawyer Jonna Lindemuth said in a statement that the application met the standard under Alaska law without question. Quote, "This rejection is without basis, and we will now turn to the courts for a remedy," end quote. Division of Elections Director Gail Funumiai made her decision on the day, she said, as the deadline. Much of the recall debate has focused on Dunleavy's budget vetoes. Dunleavy has also been criticized for other budget proposals. The legislature enacted some of the proposals, including a $25 million reduction to the University of Alaska budget and a $40 million reduction to the Alaska Marine Highway System. Dunleavy says the cuts were needed to balance a budget that would pay for full permanent fund dividends under a 1982 state law. Under state law, Dunleavy must propose next year's budget by December 15th. With another battle over school funding in Alaska shaping up for next year, some residents are taking a closer look at the state's obligation to educate its children. A ballot initiative petition called Alaska Students Educational Bill of Rights was approved by Lieutenant Governor Kevin Meyer on September 30th and is now circulating in Sitka and the state's other urban centers. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
Hey, Reith, how are you? I have a petition here defining what a quality education is. Would you like to sign it?
Rebecca Himshute is standing on the curb outside of Sitka High School on a cold, wet evening, gathering signatures for an initiative that she and other educators would like to see on the primary election ballot next August. She teaches English as a second language students in the elementary schools and is a former member of the State Board of Education. Simply put, Alaska's constitution requires the state to, quote, establish and maintain a system of public education open to all children of the state, close quote. But it's silent on what that system really means. Himshute says this initiative will spell it out in statute.
This document is going to statutorily require the state of Alaska to provide wonderful things like voluntary high-quality pre-K for every kid, regardless whether you're on the road system or in a rural place. It's going to make sure our schools offer things that schools should offer, like librarians, nurses, world language, including Tlingit language. And it's going to make sure we have a system of higher education in the state.
That last point about the university isn't arbitrary. The same clause in the Alaska Constitution that requires a school system also requires the state to have a university. Earlier this year, Alaska Governor Mike Dunleavy attempted to slash 41% of the University of Alaska's budget, which caused many to wonder if that would harm its faculty and accreditation to the point that it wouldn't really be a university anymore. Those same questions surround deep cuts to public education, which the governor has shown a clear appetite for. While Rebecca Himshute is on the curb outside, Representative Jonathan Christ Tompkins is inside Sitka High School holding a town hall meeting with residents. He says that no one's ever really tested Alaska's constitutional mandate for education in this way.
There hasn't been a case in Alaska history litigated over sort of like a categorical inadequacy of like all statewide K-12 education is inadequate because government is underfunding K-12 education.
The legislature and the governor have already gone to court to fight out their differences over so-called forward funding of education, the ability of the legislature to appropriate funding for schools one year that will be spent in the next. Christ Tompkins anticipates that if the governor uses his veto power to cut too deeply into education funding, more lawsuits are inevitable.
I wouldn't be surprised if a case is brought against the governor and or the legislature for failing to provide for an adequate education if the cuts are so severe that they sort of compromise the adequacy of public education. Like if there's a 25% cut to K-12 education, I think there's a very strong grounds for litigation saying this is now inadequate public education.
Christ Tompkins said the governor would likely try to find a fulcrum, a balance point, where he could still make a significant cut to education without alienating the 16 members of the legislature who can protect him from an override.
Hey, you need to sign this.
What are we signing?
Rebecca Hemschut hopes that scenario never comes to pass. In fact, she says the ballot initiative sponsors wouldn't mind if the legislature embraced the idea of an education bill of rights and ran with it.
But there's a very good chance the legislature would see the will of the people, and the legislature would choose to take their own steps that parallel this ballot initiative and not require us to vote on it.
Backers of the Alaska Students Educational Bill of Rights have registered under the name Alaskans for Excellent Public Education. They hope to obtain 28,501 signatures by mid-December and to see a proposition on next August's primary election ballot. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Want me to catch you another time?
A report says the Public Defender Agency is passing off more cases to the Office of Public Advocacy due to conflicts of interest with other cases or clients. The report from a state oversight unit says the number of conflicts jeopardizes the primary defense role the agency plays, and says the more cases the agency can't do, the more the Office of Public Advocacy and contract attorneys will do. The report also says the Public Defender Agency inconsistently reports the number of cases it has and says the agency would be more efficient with more support staff. Public Defender Samantha Shuro says the agency will review the findings. Quinlan Steiner, before resigning as public defender this year, tried to make a case for additional funding to support the agency's caseload. The U.S. Senate last week agreed to spend $6.5 million on cases of missing and murdered indigenous women. It's a small line item within a massive spending package, but it's one Senator Lisa Murkowski is proud to have included.
That opens up funding to go, you know, investigate cold cases and just really put some energy behind this issue. That's brand new. That is included within this bill.
Spotty data makes it hard for researchers to look into the killings and disappearances of Native women. The spending bill directs the Bureau of Indian Affairs to coordinate with law enforcement agencies and develop guidelines for data collection. Michelle Demert is Chief Justice for the Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes Supreme Court. She says she's grateful for the funds Murkowski is pursuing and also for the congressional recognition of how devastating the problem is for many rural Alaska communities.
She's listening to us. She understands that these issues are close to home and they impact our lives on a daily basis. You know, there's one less sister, there's one less auntie.
Demert spoke today from her hometown of Klawak, population 800, where she's participating in a summit about violence against women.
In the last 5 years, we've had, I think, three women in Klawak who've either died at the hands of someone violently or have had unexplained suspicious deaths, and only one of those cases has been actually prosecuted.
The funding is part of a $332 billion Senate spending bill and passed the Senate overwhelmingly, but must be reconciled with the House version and pass both chambers again by November 21st to avoid a government shutdown. Murkowski chairs the Appropriations Subcommittee that writes the budget for the BIA, the Interior Department, and other environmental resource agencies. Among the Alaska priorities in the bill is $29 million in EPA grants for Alaska Village water systems. The Trump administration proposed slashing the village program to $3 million. Instead, Murkowski boosted the program with an extra $5 million over last year's level. The U.S. Forest Service is kicking off a series of public meetings today in Juneau to discuss why it's seeking a full exemption to the roadless rule in the Tongass National Forest. Clinton-era roadless rule makes it difficult to build new roads through national lands. But state officials and Alaska's congressional delegation have long maintained there's not enough access to valuable stands of timber or energy and mining opportunities in the region. In October, the Forest Service announced it was moving ahead with the full exemption. An earlier comment period suggests most of the public wants to keep the federal rule in place. Tribal governments, tourism operators, and environmental groups have expressed concern about the impacts this change could have on deer and salmon habitat. The Forest Service will not be recording verbal comments at tonight's meeting, but the agency is taking written comments and answering questions. It starts at 5 p.m. at Elizabeth Peratrovich Hall. Anchorage Republican Josh Rivak is Alaska's newest state senator. Senate Republicans voted Saturday to confirm Rivak to fill a vacant seat. Rivak was sworn into his new position by Lieutenant Governor Kevin Meyer. Rivak replaces fellow Republican Chris Birch, who died on August 7th from heart complications. Rivak says he emphasized to the senators the need to compromise.
You know, when we look at issues, we have to balance the policy with the with sort of the public sentiment, you know, and all the issues that we're dealing with. There's some serious issues. Some folks look at things real analytically, others just look at things politically, and finding a balance between the two, I think, is important.
Rivak was Governor Mike Dunleavy's second choice for the seat. Senate Republicans did not confirm his first pick, Representative Lattie Shaw. Senate President Kathy Geisel says she welcomes Rivak to the Senate.
We feel that he knows how to bring folks together from all areas of the political spectrum, and he has demonstrated a desire to find real solutions that work for Alaska.
Rivak had been a state representative since January. Rivak's South Anchorage House seat is now vacant. District 25 Republicans are expected to forward recommended replacements to Dunleavy. Federal agency says the rate of fatal airplane crashes in Alaska is higher than the national average. Juneau Empire reported Sunday that the National Transportation Safety Board has preliminary reports for 10 fatal plane wrecks in Alaska for the 2019 calendar year. That figure does not include an October 17th crash in Unalaska, which does not yet have a federal report. The state had 9 fatal accidents last year, 8 in 2017, 12 in 2016, and 11 in 2015. The agency's website indicates 5.4% of the 221 fatal crashes in the U.S. in 2016 occurred in Alaska, which has about 0.02% of the national population. And finally, Transportation Security Administration agents at New Jersey's Newark Liberty Airport uncovered a more decorative than deadly item when they checked a passenger's carry-on. Agents on Tuesday thought there was a gun in the bag when they put it through the X-ray machine. However, closer inspection revealed a gun-shaped toilet paper roller. The realistic replica gun was designed to spin paper instead of bullets. Travelers are not permitted to bring real or replica firearms through security checkpoints. TSA says it gave the man the option to place it in a checked bag, hand it off to a companion, or surrender it. He decided to give it to the TSA. And looking at the National Weather Service forecast, tonight, rain, lows in the mid-30s, east winds to 15 miles per hour. That's it for the KTOO News Update for Monday, November 4th, 2019. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.